Woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who substitute for light, or who substitute for darkness light and for light darkness, who substitute bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. This is a verse from Isaiah chapter 5 and verse 20. And while these words were written some 2,700 years ago, I certainly believe that they apply to the current culture that we live in here in the United States of America. We live in times where those things that are evil are called good, and those things that are good are pronounced as evil. And in no other place can you find this to be true than with the hot button issues of today being abortion and homosexuality. We live in a society where the ability to kill innocent children is called something that is good, and the union of man to man and woman to woman is called something that is good as well. But it is not just that these things are called good or that they are approved of, but it is the fact that those who are opposed to such things, we are reprimanded, and we are degraded, and we are attacked as being the ones who speak that which is evil. Those who fight to end infanticide and those who fight to protect God's sacred institution of marriage are deemed as the evil, not just the wrong, but the evil side of the argument. The question we might ask is, how in the world did we get to such a place as a society? How is it that we got to a place where abortion and homosexuality are not just accepted, but they are praised? How do we get to a place where those who would stand against such things are deemed as evil? I will suggest that this is not something that happened just overnight. This is something that has been a progression. It is something that has been of the snowball effect. And I'll say as well that this isn't just true of these two issues, but it is true of any sin that is accepted by society. How is it that sins have come to be accepted by society? How have they come to be praised? How is it that sin has been watered down to such a degree? This morning I'd like to give to us really Satan's plan for how sin is to be watered down. We want to talk about the watering down of sin. We have seen it in this society. We have seen it not just in this age, but in many ages in the past, where sin, something that was once looked down upon, was now something that is accepted, something that is praised. I want us to consider that this morning, to know how we got to this place, and also to be aware of how this happened so that we can stand against things that might come down the line in the future. Hope that we will be blessed by our study this morning. We thank you for being here. I will say it is a beautiful day today. We got teased. We got teased during the middle part of August. It got kind of cool and felt good. We thought fall was here. Well, then it jumped back up on us. That was just a dirty trick that was played on us. But hopefully the nice weather that is here today will be the beginning of our autumn season, and we are certainly looking forward to that, to the beautiful weather, to the trees changing colors. God's creation is just, it's wonderful, it's awesome, and I hope that the weather is here to stay. We're thankful that we are here this morning, blessed with this opportunity to come together and to worship our God, to sing praises to His name, to lift up our voices together. Appreciate so much the songs led by Marty and everybody here lifting up their voices together. We're certainly blessed to be here. On a sad note, something I'd like to pass along to the congregation. You might see it in the bulletin. You might remember Tim Ruffin, who was here. He was our fifth Sunday speaker, I think, at the beginning of the year. Got the big smile. We all remember that. Tim's mom passed away this past week. She was in a second battle with cancer, I believe, and she lost that fight. It happened, I believe, this past Thursday or Friday morning. Let's remember him. A good man. She was the best of people. We could really use a lot more people like his mom Linda in this world. And pray for them. They had the service and everything yesterday. But I know that Tim and his two brothers and his dad will certainly miss her. let's be thinking of them. And if you have any contact with them through Facebook or anything, I'd really encourage you to send him your well wishes, be praying for them as well. We have many who are traveling to this week. Let's remember them. One particular couple, Ron and Spring, are in Missouri letting their parents know that they will be grandparents again. Spring and Ron are expecting a child, May of next year. So let's be thinking of them. Let's be praying for them, as well as our other mothers, Melissa and Melanie. If you sit over here, watch out, apparently, right in this area. Jill, you've got four already. Hopefully not. But just if you're in this vicinity, you can watch out. I think Katie and I are going to move over this area a little bit. I'm just kidding. If you want to have children, just go sit over here and you might be okay. But let's be remembering them, praying for them, Melissa, Melanie, Spring. God is so good. God is so good, and He is blessing us so much here, this congregation. Let's be praying for them. Let's be thanking God for the many blessings that we have. We're certainly joyous and rejoice with our parents here, or soon-to-be parents, being thankful to God. So happy for them, and we'll be praying for them, certainly. Let's consider this morning. Oh, and one other thing, our meeting, let's be remembering, next Sunday will be the beginning of our meeting. Let's be making our plans to be here on Sunday. Make sure you're aware of the schedule change for next Sunday, and let's be looking forward to that. Let's get into our lesson, though, this morning, talking about the watering down of sin. So if we are to water down sin, what is the first thing we would do? I think the first thing that we would do, or that we would expect to see, would be to see sin popularized. To popularize the sin. Notice that there is a time, as we talked about with abortion and with homosexuality, there was a time when there were certain things that were just universally looked down upon and accepted as being morally wrong. The taking of innocent human life, that was one of those things. The practice of men being with men and women being with women, those are things that would fall into that category. And this isn't to say that these things were not practiced for centuries. People have been killing babies for as long as time has been. Same thing with homosexuality. And those things have been around. It's just the fact that those things were not accepted. They were not deemed as being something that was good. And why is it? Why is it that those things back in the day had to be done in private? Why was it that it was an absolute shameful thing for a woman to have her unborn baby killed? Why was it absolutely shameful for a man to be with a man, a woman to be with a woman? It's because there was a time in the past whenever there was a moral code that was universally accepted. Not to say everyone accepted it. Not even say they liked it, but they respected, they knew that there was something about these things that made them wrong. And where did that moral standard come from? Where did that moral code come from? Suggested it came from God. That these things, that we know it is wrong to kill the innocent. Why? Because we see that rooted in the Word of God. You can look to such places such as Romans chapter 1, verses 28 through the end of the chapter, where Paul is talking about the sins of the Gentiles. And notice that he has this list of sins that he goes through in those verses. And he says that these things are worthy of death. One of those being murder. The killing of the innocent. And then not just those who practice such things, but he says those who approve of them are guilty as well. So that is something that was rooted in society from the beginning, that the Gentiles should not have been doing those things, and that they should have known that they weren't to do those things because they should have known of God. Earlier up in the chapter 1, Paul speaks to that. But not only is murder, do we know that murder is to be wrong, but 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 9 and 10, as Paul is speaking to the Corinthians, telling them, these are the things that you used to be. You used to be of the homosexuals and the sodomites, the murderers, the drunkards. You used to be all these things. He says, such were some of you. But now if you've been cleansed, you've been justified, you've been sanctified. You see, these things, this moral standard has been around for a long time. And for a long time, people accepted those things. And that's why homosexuality, that's why abortion, that's why so many things were not praised. They were not elevated, they were not lauded, but they were shameful. It was shameful for a woman to publicly, for it to be publicly known that she had had an abortion. It was shameful for a man to be with man and woman to be with woman. But oh, how things are different today. How different are things today. Instead of abortion being looked down upon, and homosexuality done in secret, done in the dark corner, these things are now done in the open because they have been popularized. No longer is abortion or homosexuality taboo. No, not at all. Instead, it has been popularized by many of the rich and famous and by many of the national media. Marches are organized to applaud such things and to promote their normalization. Individuals will proudly declare that they have had abortions or that they are living in or that they're practicing homosexual actions. Those things which were once done in secret, those things that you might say were once done in the closet, are now front and center in the public spotlight. No longer is the closet needed. No longer is anonymity needed, because these sins have been made popular by society. And all the while, those who stand for God's truths are being called the minority. We are being called the misfits. We are being shamed into thinking that our stand for God's truth is something that is evil. And this is all done in the name of everyone's doing it. Everyone is doing it. How does sin begin to be watered down? It is watered down to begin with by people making it the normal, everyday thing. But secondly, if you want to water down sin, you need to legalize it. First, you need to popularize it. There we go. Finally got it out. Then you need to legalize it. And how is that done? Well, the United States government, while certainly not being a theocracy, and please don't think that I'm saying that the United States government has never been a theocracy. We've always been a democracy. But many of the laws that began this country, again, they were based on that standard, universally accepted moral code. That's what they were founded upon. It was not legal for women to kill their babies because that was recognized for what it is, murder. It was not legal for men to marry men or for women to marry women because it was recognized as unnatural and immoral. And for many years, these things and other illegal activities were unlawful because of the recognition that they went against the universally accepted moral code they recognized as being wrong. But if you want to begin to change perception, if you want to begin to change how something is viewed, one of the quickest ways to do that, again, is to make it legal. And to make it legal, to make it popular, go together. Because once something is legal, more people will feel more free to do it. Therefore, it becomes more popular. And if you want something to become popular, you need to try to legalize it. Abortion was made legal with some regulations back in 1973. That was a long time ago. And we see where we have gotten since that point. And it was just this year that the Supreme Court that homosexual marriage must be permissible in all states. And why is it that this has come to be? Well, much of it has to do, again, with our political system, how our politicians, how they like to pander to, again, what is perceived as the majority. But just to speak on that for a second, we must recognize, especially whenever it comes to homosexuality, that population in this country is at most 3%. Those who would fit in a lifestyle, 3%. Yet we see them so vocal because they want to water down the sinfulness of their actions. But the politicians are willing to pander to them. Why? Because they want the vote. They want the vote. And the people who want it, they want to be able to do whatever they want to, regardless of the immoral implications of it. But it isn't just the fact that these things are now legal, that people are able to do these things, but it's the fact that those who push back, those who stand up for God, are told to shut up with their hate speech. That to stand up against that which is immoral is now considered hate speech. And it is sad. It is so sad that God's original design for marriage has been greatly changed. That God's design for the protection of human life, that it has been diminished. No longer does government reward the righteous and punish the wicked. Do you recognize that that's what Paul speaks of in Romans chapter 13? Romans chapter 13, Paul right there lays out very specifically for us the role of government. Romans chapter 13 and verses 3 and 4. Romans 13 and verses 3 and 4. Romans 13, verses 3 and 4, talking about God's role for government as Paul gives us here. For rulers are not a cause of fear for what good behavior. Then I guess we have to say, well, what is determined to be good? Today, what is good, just as Isaiah says, is being called evil. And that which is evil is being called good. Paul's saying that for good behavior according to God's moral standard. That those who do good things, they don't have a reason to fear government. Because that is for evil. Do you want to have no fear of authority? Then do what is good, and you will have praise from the same. For it is a minister of God to you for good. That is the role of government. Nothing more and nothing less. For them to be a minister for good. But if you do what is evil, be afraid. For it does not bear the sword for nothing. For it is a minister of God, an avenger who brings wrath on the one who practices evil. Our government has been flipped on its head. And just as Isaiah said whenever they were calling good evil and evil good, where they were exchanging light for darkness and darkness for light, where they were calling sweet bitter and bitter sweet, our government has done the same thing. And they have completely gone past what God designed for them to do, which was to reward the righteous and to punish the wicked. And that is not what we see today. We see them legalizing that which is wickedness. And punishing those who strive to practice good. And this is all in an effort to water down sin and to take away its sting. So first you want to popularize sin, then you want to legalize sin, and thirdly, what you want to do is you want to normalize sin. You really want to water it down, you need to normalize it. Because once sin is made popular, once it is made legal, then it is time for you to simply say that this is a normal, everyday thing in our society. Think of the issue of homosexuality for just a minute, specifically with this. And I'm not trying to soapbox, trying to beat anything down, but this is just a hot topic issue of today. Think about this issue for a second, though, just specifically. Remember that at one point, those practicing homosexuality, they had to do that in secret. They had to do it and they were not willing to share their relationships for anything because they wanted to hide it. They wanted to hide their actions from the public's eye. But today's environment could not be any different. It could not be any more different from what there was. Because now there are parades. Parades that celebrate and flaunt, really. Flaunt homosexuality as a lifestyle. The parades, the social media efforts, and other actions have done nothing but try to show that homosexuality is something that is normal. And the others that see the action as sinful, that they're just wrong. They're just wrong. Because this isn't something that is abnormal. No, this is something that is normal. But can I suggest to you for a second that even though something might be declared as normal, that doesn't mean that it's right. Just because something is normal does not mean that it is right. It seems normal for us to know of people who have sexual relationships outside of marriage. That's normal. We know probably many people, we work with many people, we might have family members who practice such things. But you know that God condemns that, Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 4, that the marriage bed, that it is undefiled. But that fornicators and adulterers, they will be judged. Sure, it is a normal thing for us to see today. But again, that doesn't make it right. It might be normal for us also to see drunk people out in the street. To see them at sporting events, to see them at musical concerts. But again, that doesn't mean that it is right because those who practice drunkenness will not inherit the kingdom of God. 1 Corinthians 6 and verse 10. It's normal, but it doesn't make it right. It might be normal for us to see people walking around scantily clad and drawing unnecessary attention to certain parts of their body. That's normal. We see it every day. But the Apostle Paul says in 1 Timothy chapter 2 that we are to dress ourselves in modest apparel, not in a way that draws unnecessary attention. There are a lot of things that we see every day that we might consider normal. We might see a drunk person, not think twice about it because we just saw one 5 minutes ago. But that does not lessen the serious nature of sin in the eyes of the God-fearing. But you know, that's exactly what Satan wants. Satan wants the seriousness of sin to be watered down. He wants people to become desensitized to sin and to see sin as something that is just an everyday thing. Not a big deal to see the drunk person. Not a big deal to have people sleeping around. Not a big deal to have people walking around naked. Not a big deal because we see it every day. And the more we see it, the more we become used to it. And the less our souls hurt to see such things. And that is exactly what Satan wants. He wants us to recognize sin as a normal, everyday thing in our lives. If you want to water down sin, Satan's plan for it is to first make it popular. Make it legal. Make it a normal, everyday thing. And then finally, he thinks it would be good for it to be euphemized. To be euphemized. Once it is popular, once it is legal, once it is normal, then those who support it will try to take the edge off of it. They'll try to take the edge off of sin. They will try to not make it so polarizing. They will try to make it to where whenever this thing happens, people's ears don't perk up. They want to euphemize it to make it something that is not as serious as we might think. For the abortionists, for those who want to have abortion, for those who want to practice abortion, it is the killing of a baby. That's what it is. There is no denying that. But instead of saying that it is the killing of a baby, what they will say is that it's simply the removal and the discarding of a fetus. That's not killing a baby, it's just the removal and the discarding of a fetus. Do you see how that sounds a little different? How killing a baby, that hurts us. But they'll say, no, that's not what it is, it's just removing a fetus. Try to euphemize this sin. Abortion is, it isn't the hurting of another's body, but it is really just the cleansing of the woman's body. That's what it is. It's not the hurting of another, but it's the woman cleansing hers. It is not murder. It is simply the woman's choice to make. It's not murder. It's a choice. We make choices every day. So a choice doesn't sound like a big deal. But we don't murder every day. To hear murder, that makes their ears stand up a little bit. Like, hold on, we got to think about this. But it's not murder, it's just a choice. That's how society has tried to euphemize abortion. Or maybe, well, what about homosexuality? Maybe it isn't that homosexuality, it's not something that is unnatural, but it is just an alternative lifestyle. Not unnatural, just an alternative lifestyle. Or it's not a perversion, but instead it's just evolution of love. Love. That's the greatest euphemization of homosexuality, is to say that it is all about love, and that just is not the case. Just as Isaiah wrote all those years ago, people will want to call good evil, they want to call evil good, they want to call light darkness and darkness light, but they want to call that which is bitter, bitter. They want to call it sweet. And that which is sweet, they want to call bitter. They want to take the bitterness of sin and change the semantics of it and try to reformulate it in our minds to make us think that it's not that bad. It's not that bad. It is bad to kill a baby, but it's not that bad to make a choice. It's bad to have a perversion, but it's not that bad to just have an alternative lifestyle. What Satan wants. That's the way he gets into us, is to take sin and to euphemize it, to make it seem like it's not that bad. And that's just the end of this great plan that he has to try to water down sin in our lives, to make it popular, to make it legal, to make it normal, to euphemize it, to make it seem not that bad. Brethren, how do we stand up in times such as these? How do we stand up in times such as these? We need to, first of all, I think, just get real for a second. Shoot straight, talk straight, and say that we will be hated for our stand for the truth. We will. We are. Present tense, we are hated for our stand for the truth. But we must remember that we are not standing up for sin for our sakes. We're not doing it for us. We're doing it for God. We are standing up boldly in the name of Jesus Christ, the Son of God. We need to remember that Jesus encouraged the 12 to take a strong stand against their persecution, because they would face, He said so in Matthew chapter 10 and verse 22, He said, "You will be hated for My name's sake." And then also in Matthew chapter 5, we'll finish there, Matthew chapter 5, in the Sermon on the Mount, as Jesus is proclaiming the characteristics of citizens of the kingdom that He is coming to establish, after He finishes the Beatitudes, He quickly transitions straight into those who will be persecuted. Notice this, Matthew chapter 5, beginning in verse 10. At the tail end of the Beatitudes, Matthew chapter 5 and verse 10, He said, Blessed are those who have been persecuted for the sake of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you and persecute you and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of Me. Blessed, happy, joyous should be that type of people. For just as He said to His apostles, there's great reward for those who are persecuted for My sake. Great reward for us. We must remember that that which is unacceptable in the eyes of God must be unacceptable in our eyes. And if we suffer for it, then so be it. This world is not our home anyways. So our role then is to do, as Jesus continues to speak of here in verse 13. He says that you, actually let's look at verse 12, talk about the reward. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward in heaven is great. Well, in the same way they persecute the prophets who are before you. And then transition in what you should continue to do. He says, you are the salt of the earth. And if the salt has become tasteless, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men. He says, you, citizens of the kingdom, for us that Christians, you are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor does anyone light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on the lampstand. And it gives light to all those who are in the house. Let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your God who is in heaven. Ladies and gentlemen, we live in a world today that is tasteless. We live in a world today that is covered in darkness. How shall that which is tasteless, how shall that which is in the dark be made good again and be made to light? It's by people like us. People like us. We are the salt. We are the light. If we shirk our duties, if we fail to be salt, if we fail to be light, then this world will continue to be tasteless. It will continue to be dark. We have a great responsibility to not let sin be watered down. We have a responsibility to call sin, sin, and to not let Satan have his victory. That is our job as Christians. We must never, ever water down the seriousness of sin, because all sin is worthy of death. And we don't want people to be lost eternally because of their sin. We must call it sin, and we must stand where God calls us to stand. Isaiah said those famous words. It was well-known words back in Isaiah chapter 5 and verse 20. And for 2,700 years, those words have been true, and maybe no no more true than they are today. Men will try to water down sin. They will try to de-emphasize the serious nature of sin. Sin will separate us from God. And we must remind ourselves, and we must teach others about the horrible nature of sin. And may God help us. May we lean on Him for strength to stand strong in the face of opposition and never be willing to back down from the fight that is between good and evil. May God be our rock and our strength in these times, and may God be glorified in our fight to stand up against that which is evil. May God be glorified in it. May we stand strong, soldiers. May we stand strong, and may we fight the good fight and receive our reward in the next life.